Behind every life is a story. No one can tell your story like you can. Welcome to the Testament Podcast, which is a ministry of Canyon Creek Presbyterian Church, where we are on a mission to build relationships wherever we go, in Jesus' name. I am your host, the Bearded One, also known as Pastor Chris. The purpose of the podcast is actually quite simple: conversation about all things related to life and culture from, of course, a theological perspective. Some topics will be heavy, some light, but most will be somewhere in the middle. In today's episode, we're going to talk about something that I hope garners lots of laughs and also lots of insights. We're going to be talking about parenting, but we're going to talk a little differently about parenting. But before we go into the main theme for today, I'd like to tell a story. This week, we resumed school after our girls were out of school. Mostly my oldest daughter did school in the dining room, her fourth grade year. And my little one, this is her first year, she is in kindergarten. And I remember I walked them up the sidewalk, walking them to school. And as I walked behind and watched my daughter's backpack, that's like almost as big as her, I cried the entire way up the sidewalk because I was like, oh my gosh, they're getting so old. Well, some of you would say, you have no idea what it's like to have old children. So today what we're gonna be talking about is parenting adult children, fact or fiction. So we have a very special guest today, and our special guest is the Reverend Ellen Dittman. And if you know Ellen, she is absolutely 100% awesome and amazing and keeps all of us here at Canyon Creek on task and on target. If not, she will find you. Ellen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, good, good. So before we get into the content, tell us a little bit about who you are, you know, what is your background, personally, professionally, spiritually, just tell us who you are a little bit.
So, yeah, well, I'm a pastor, and that's been a long time in formation. Since I went to seminary, like in my 50s. Yeah, and before that, a chemical engineer, and that was 20 years as a chemical engineer, a lot of different cool projects. In the midst of that, a mom, and, you know, of two boys, wow, and, and, you know, here I find myself, you know, sort of like a matriarch something, and don't really get how that transitioned, but here I am. So it's been quite a journey.
So when you say chemical engineer, what's the coolest thing you've ever been a part of making?
Well, we were on a high explosive project for the government, and I was one of the lead process engineers on that, and we developed a new process that was more bang per buck. That was an earlier life.
Some could argue that ministry might be the same thing.
Yes, yeah, it was good training.
Sure, right? Especially, right? Yeah. So how old are your boys?
So I've got one who's 31, one who's 33. And yeah, wow. I don't know how they got to their 30s. And
gosh.
I remember when they had that little backpack going up the street, just like yours.
Just so you know, we're gonna make sure that both of her grown adult boys will get a copy of this so they can hear about all the time she's reminiscing about them and their big backpacks.
Oh, good. I didn't ask their permission, so they'll have to forgive.
Once again,
forgiving their mother.
So. Something else that caught me, so how did exactly, that seems like an interesting shift from chemical engineer to pastor.
Yes, I went back to a reunion of one of the companies that I worked for as a chemical engineer. It was the one where we were doing the, you know, the defense industry stuff. And I got that question from one of those engineers. It was like, how could you, an engineer and a scientist, like, be in, like, a pastoral profession now? And it's weird because, to me, One, they're very closely linked, because science to me is just kind of measuring and observing what God does and what God has done. And so it's, you know, it, to me, it reveals God rather than the other way around. But yeah, I think I was called to ministry back in my teens, and it just took God a really long time with me.
I can relate. You know, what's, you said something there, when you talk about sort of God's call, one of the things that, you know, as I understood, you know, the primary way I understood God's call in my life was obviously my transition, you know, not growing up in church and coming to faith later in life, you know, later in life being a college student. But, you know, I remember when, you know, we had our first, and I remember being in the delivery room, and then, you know, the first time I held her, it was like I had a whole new understanding of call.
Mm-hmm.
And how that sort of the idea of being a parent, and also how we understand how God relates to us.
Yeah.
You know, how that sort of that relationship, it seems like there's some differences but a whole lot of similarities, right?
Yeah, I remember that moment too, and I was scared to death to be a mom, because I was afraid I'd raise a kid like me, you know, and okay, so I'm a perfectionist and a one on the Enneagram, if that means anything to you. And yeah, I was hard on myself my whole life, and it's like, why should I have kids that, you know, they may be like me, they may have a difficult, like, and so here is this beautiful little boy on my belly in the delivery room, mm-hmm. and I just melted, and yeah, that's when God made me a mama.
Oh, wow. So speaking of being a mama, when we think about what it's like to parent adults, right? We, you know, I've done in sort of preparation for our episode today, I started looking up a lot of things about, you know, what parenting as adult and all the how-tos and whatnots, and you can find a lot of opinion, but there's not, you know, what I couldn't find a lot of, like, okay, this is actually proven to work, right? So, you know, you find things like healthy boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or how do we maintain, you know, good relationships when, you know, children, because children never, like my mom says, you're always going to be my baby.
Yeah.
But you're still, you know, I'm 41, you know, mm-hmm. and she's, but it's still, she's like, I just talked to her today. And she's like, I can't believe you're getting so old. My birthday is coming up in a week and I'll be 42. And she's just like, you know, you're still always going to be my baby. But I'm like, Mom, stop. But, you know, understanding in her, I can kind of see it with my oldest, like, you know, you're my children, you're always going to be, no
yeah.
matter what you say. Like, I'm already weirding out my daughter now. She's like, Dad, stop, you know? So when we think about parenting, how has it been different for you when you parenting younger versus older?
Yeah. I think I, for better or worse, you know, there are no manuals, and you do what you can, and thank God there is grace. If it weren't for grace, right? So when Tom and I, we were brought up in pretty disciplined families, you know, and it was like, you know, you do your stuff. In my family, you do your stuff. You might not be surprised at that.
No.
And so my kids knew, you know, it's like, man, if I'm kind of in this range, in this kind of middle of the road range, I'm good. You know, it's like, I'm not going to get any flack. And so that's how they were raised. And then when they got in college, I stepped back, and I think it freaked them out. It's like I'm so used to having this, I don't know, this lid on it, you know?
Sure,
and
sure.
It's, I feel like I, the mama, was the lid on their life. And I wish I had done it differently now, but that's how it was,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so I think that was a big transition, especially for Andrew, my oldest. Because I think that having that lid there made him feel comfortable.
Sure.
It's like he knew things were right and bounded and whatever, you know. And so then it's not that I didn't love him. I stepped back because he needed, you know, it was time. Sure. So I think that was a big transition for him. And then with Matthew, it was a lot different. Matthew and I are exactly opposite learning styles. I am concrete sequential, and he is abstract random. And it became very clear about his sophomore year that I couldn't raise him.
Wow.
And I just, it's like, because I wanted him to be about excellence. I didn't care how that looked. Just, you know, you got all these gifts, go for it.
Right.
And because I was about excellence, if he was opposite from me, if he was going out, then he's going to be about non-excellence. Well, no, that ain't okay with me.
Right.
So I just had to step back and say, like, I love you. I don't know how to raise you anymore. I've done what I can. I'm here. And, you know, let's go. Like, whatever.
Wow.
God provided.
Sure.
God provided leaders in his life. His senior year. This is what I talk about grace, you know. So Matthew's senior year, he was in band. That was kind of his home. And choir was also his other home in school. But his band director was leaving. All of a sudden was leaving. He's going to have a new band director his senior year. That's not fun for anyone. But
right.
This new band director came in, and oh, my God, he was all about everything I was all about. And Matthew followed him like the Pied Piper. And Matthew ended up going to the college that I would have chosen for him in the program I would have chosen for him because
right.
he was following this guy.
Right.
And it was like, anyway, so it was just absolute grace. But I think there's, you just do what you can.
Sure.
Yeah.
That reminds me of a conversation I had with my daughter. You know, she's starting to play tennis now and being more really involved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a commitment that we've decided to make and say, if we're going to do something, let's do this and let's do it well.
Yeah.
And I am very much the same way. I am about excellence.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to do something.
Do it.
Give it
mm-hmm.
your all.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one else has ever done it before.
Yeah.
And I can live with what happens. And she said something to me one time that caused me to sort of readjust. She says, well, and I asked her, you know, do you feel like I put too much pressure on you, just enough pressure or not enough? And she says, well, and I backed off, you know, I was teaching her tennis a lot, but mm-hmm. I realized that I had to back off because once that line gets skewed between dad and coach, it's difficult. And
right.
so it's interesting because she says, well, I feel like there's a lot of pressure because I feel like my coach is at the place where she plays full time. You know, I feel like they want me to be good, but I feel like you want me to be perfect.
Whoa, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, you know, but that was not my response. My immediate
yeah.
response was, my wife is looking at me like, oh gosh, here he goes. And I say, well, you're absolutely right. I want you to shoot for perfection in everything that you do. I know full well you can't attain
yeah.
perfection.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll get really close to being mm-hmm. excellent if you aim for the stars.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that sounds good.
Yeah.
Like if this was like a sports movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hey, you're talking to your daughter.
Yeah.
Your 10-year-old daughter.
It
you know,
feels
you might
different.
Want to reevaluate that. And so, but you saying that helps. It's another like sort of slap upside my head as to how you do that and how, you know, she gets older, what that's like.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's... one of the things you said also that piqued my, you know, that, you know, you have, you know, we have an obvious difference, right? You have all boys and I have all girls.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like to raise a house full of, were you it, right? In your house?
Yeah, I was, even the dog.
Even the dog
yeah,
was an, oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just one against, you know, four, basically. And the thing is, I don't know... I don't think I could have taken the drama of girls. I got girls when I started doing the youth here at Canyon Creek, and it's like God spared me a little bit and had some time for me to be a little more patient and formed before I got girls.
Right. That's so funny because, you know, and it's no secret. It's a running joke in my family, and everyone knows this about me, that I wanted nothing but boys. If you were to tell me I was going to have 5-6 boys. That was how I always understood it. And I got these beautiful girls, and it's just like, I cannot see a world in which I have boys. Like,
yeah.
As funny and as awkward, as dramatic as it can be.
Yeah.
It is so normal for me. And so, you know, even though I live on half of my house, you know, the girls, their bathroom and their rooms are on one side of the house. We have like sort of that split ranch floor plan.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even tell you what my other half, now that they're older, I can't tell you, looks, I don't even go over there.
Yeah.
I don't even go down there.
That's probably good.
Don't even go, I can't, you know, before I used to remember like reading, you know, all the little stuff. It's like now it's like I have to knock on the wall, you know, hey, is everybody good back there? Everybody decent, you know? And so it's just like, oh, but that's normal, right? So, I imagine that raising children may be different now. And your husband both grew up in, as they would say, in church, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, was your background both in the Presbyterian church or something else?
Yeah. So, yeah, both Tom and I were in the Presbyterian church. I was Cumberland.
Okay.
Cumberland Presbyterian. And until college. And then ended up going into Methodist churches. And for 20 years, he and I were in the Methodist church.
And
so the kids were raised pretty much in the Methodist church. And then, you know, I end up going to school and sponsored by a Presbyterian, you know, Presbyterian church.
Sure.
So I guess the younger years of my kids, up till they were middle school, was a Methodist.
Okay. So we talk about parenting adult children, but I think our conversation starts from a different place because maybe mm-hmm. yours is somewhat unique. Raising children in a household of faith is, to say challenging, that's probably put very mildly, right? That's not an easy thing to do. Especially, I mean, as society has progressed, some would say it's digressed, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, we all know those statistics of church decline and
mm-hmm.
Christendom, all that sort of thing, but it's already hard
with
all the different things out there. But what was it like for you, or did it happen, I guess, at the same time, being both mom and pastor?
Yeah.
How was that? Was that?
So, you know, I mean, basically, when my kids were in college, I was in seminary. So Tom had three of us in college at once.
Oh.
Yeah, so, and it probably, I think that was grace, too, because I don't know that I would have done that very well.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, I mean, basically, like I said, it's like we do church, you know. I mean, it was like there's no choice. There's no question. On Sunday, we're at church, you know, and that's how the kids were raised. And they're, you know, for whatever reason, thank God, they're still in a church, you know, not in the Presbyterian church, both in more conservative churches. But they were also raised more conservative. So, you know, I mean, as I was in seminary, I was being formed, you know, and so I, you know, broadened and more, I don't know, not just taking the Bible as, you know, on the surface. And I think that's how they were raised, is just sort of more literal.
Sure.
Interpretation. So
it's almost the reverse of me. I almost had the same experience, because the gentleman that introduced me to faith
mm-hmm.
in the circle that I hung out with in college, you mm-hmm. know, now I didn't know it back then. I couldn't tell you what those words meant as it related to like theology or faith.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I see that now, going back in, and even some of the organizations that I was a part of in college,
mm-hmm.
I would now say they have a particular bend one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I went to seminary and was like, oh my gosh, this stuff is, I mean, I remember my first class, I was like, this is unbiblical, it's heresy.
Yeah. Yeah, it took some.
I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Because I had read, my whole understanding in faith was I had read the Bible from front to cover.
Yeah.
That was my theological doctrine. I didn't have a confession. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, all these other authors and all these other people. I literally had a book.
Yeah.
I had the book.
Yeah.
I had the book. And my whole...
And it was black and white.
Period.
Well, a little red. Sometimes red.
But mine had red.
Yeah.
And a lot of highlights and underlines and things like that. Notes on the side. But...
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So when we talk about, how do you... because I'm sure there's a lot. I mean, there's probably more folks within our congregation, probably a lot who are listening, who have adult children. So what would be some of the, if you were to say, best practices to where you maintain that sort of a healthy relationship? Because you never stop being a parent,
being
right?
A parent.
So what would you say are some best practices for navigating parenting adult children?
Yeah. Well... I think the best one is really what I learned in chaplaincy, and that is meeting them where they are. And again, as a one on the Enneagram, ones are reformers. We're always like trying to fix and move forward and this and that. And so it's different for my kids now for me to meet them where they are and to just be curious about, I'm curious about that. Tell me more. Rather than, are you kidding me? you need to this and this and this,
Right.
And so, it's not judging, It's that was a big transition to not judge, your kids,
wow.
Because the metaphor of that your kids grow up and you are putting in their backpack what they need, what you believe they need. And there is a time when they take that backpack, and it has to happen, and they take that backpack and they unpack it, and they take this out and they look at it and they think, well, nope, and they throw it away. And then they're, it's like some things they keep that we've put in there, that we've instilled in them, and sometimes some things they trash, and then sometimes they trash so much that they have to kind of go back and try to find, what they trash, but it's on their terms, so they have to pack that backpack, and it's huge, and I find that both my boys are married, one of them has nearly four kids and they're still packing that backpack, and the deal is it's their backpack, and I did my job, and I may not have done it great. I did it the best I could. That's when I start crying. You just do the best you can,
right?
And then it's up to God and them and their spouse and or their community or their boss or their whatever, the world that's forming them.
Sure.
But then it's hard sometimes to stay connected when they're going a different way.
Sure.
As the tears are coming down my face.
Oh, it's all good.
Okay,
I'm crying all week.
it's hard to not distance from them if you don't agree with what they're doing, and it's hard to even know how to stay connected. And so it's a little bit easier when they're grandkids, because it's like that's like you want to come see the grandkids and there's the kid that you don't even know how to be with,
sure.
Because it's different ground.
Sure.
But I just think that it's important. Like I try to touch base with my kids every week.
Yep.
If I haven't seen them in a while, I say, you want to go to breakfast? You want to go to lunch? My kids all know that if they're up, if they need a free meal, they know where to come. So
that's always good.
Yep. Uh-huh. So that for us is a connection point, a touch point. you know, Tom likes to do cooking out and having everyone over. That's kind of part of our dynamic. You don't get a lot of one-on-one then, but
sure.
But it's still a touch point.
So you said something, a few things that sort of caught my attention. And both you and I have done, both here and in previous ministry with young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's always a challenge is how do you can never quite get your hands on them, right?
You know, schedule
and just at the place they are in life. And one of the things that folks have always told me in ministry, I've had lots of parents of adult children, who have children that have grown up in the church.
Yeah.
But once college happens, they're just sort of, they go and sort of find their own way. And there's parents have often expressed, you know, discontent and even some deep sadness that their children aren't more involved. And not so much that they necessarily have to go to church with them.
Yeah.
But they're not involved. And so, you know, one, that's probably has several layers for, you know, you're a pastor, a person of faith, a pastor, a parent, but both your children go to church. And you said something else, and this is leading to my question, when you also mentioned that church was not an option. So what would you say to a parent who's young adult or adult who grew up, who are people of faith? I don't mean to suggest that if you don't go to church, not a person of faith,
but right,
that you're a part of some community somewhere in existence, that you're with others. So how do you do that without crossing lines?
Yeah. Well, I think that being a safe place for processing, for your young adult child, you know, your child who's that whole point of being curious, you know. So, and it's not, you know, now we always know, you know, so Andrew, then what, you know? Well, it's not curious like that. It's like, so tell me about this. So you gotta watch your tone, Mom.
right.
Yeah. And without an agenda. And I think that part of that is trusting God with your adult child, trusting that the seeds are planted, have been planted.
Sure.
You know, in the Bible, there's the planting of the seeds, and then somebody else waters. And then it's like, almost never do the ones who plant get to do the harvesting. And we sometimes find harvest in others, you know, that we get to harvest someone else's, what somebody else has planted. But we don't necessarily get the harvest. And so, letting go of that, you know, and letting, so then you're just sort of an observer. You're a loving observer. You're a balcony person. You know, you're somebody that they know is going to be there, but it's their life, their spirituality. And there is not a human on this earth that is not a spiritual being. And so God's working with that, you know. The whole thing about the God-shaped hole in us, there is a God-shaped hole in everyone, and we can trust that. It's in our kids, matter their age.
Sure.
And so the stuff that's missing, they're going to ultimately go looking. And they may look in the wrong places, but ultimately, because God is the hound of heaven, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to let them go. And so we can let up a little bit.
That's interesting, and I'm sure that dynamic changes. You know, I wonder how it does change. Obviously, when your adult children are in committed, you know, relationships, married.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm assuming those boundaries even, I guess they change even more so then, right?
Yeah, so you're talking about my boundaries with parent to child, and then they're in a committed relationship.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, oh, definitely, yeah. And, you know, I think it's a, That's another dynamic that you've got to figure out how to be in relationship with the two of them as one, and then with each one. And I think it's important to reach out and with your child's, your adult child's significant other, whoever they are, that you have a relationship with them. With my girls, you know, I have two girls now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Ashley and Kelly. And so we'll go shopping or we'll, you know, just go for coffee or go to eat or whatever, just to touch base. And if we're on a family vacation, I try to have time with them, you know, alone. I think it's important. It doesn't always happen, but that's, you know, that's a goal.
That is so true. And I have found that to be so important, where I don't think early in my marriage that I realized that was important, because I had, you know, my family, we moved away. Most of my dad's family is in Washington, D.C., Maryland area. And almost all of my mom's family is in Charlotte, not just in North Carolina, but the city of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Generations. And we moved to South Florida when I was very young. So my understanding of family was so different. Mm-hmm. My understanding of family was not grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles. It was those in your household that you saw every day. And so when I got married, it was because my wife comes from this big, vibrant, bustling family.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I didn't see the need to have a relationship with all these people.
Yeah.
I married her.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't, you know, I wasn't, didn't ever want to talk to anyone. I just never, you know, it never dawned on me or occurred to me that, you know, hey, it's important that you go, like, for Thanksgiving, that maybe you alternate, or it's important that, you know, you do these things. And for the first couple of years, I was like, why would I want to do that? Like, my family's here. And me and her mom, I mean, oh my goodness. Just butted heads early.
Yeah.
And I used to think that it was just because she was just trying to be in our business and just being overbearing.
Mm-hmm.
And we got really close. You know, she unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but we kind of got over a lot of those issues. I think we both kind of grew a little bit, but I think that the onus was on me. Because I finally realized one time, you know, she said, all I ever really wanted was to have a relationship with you.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't that I was trying to be. Now, and sometimes she was, and she would tell me, she said, that's just who she was.
Yeah.
You know, but she was, the big part about it was she just wanted to have a relationship with me.
Yeah.
To know her son and, you know, because she only had one daughter. She has all boys. She had all boys.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, it was natural.
Yeah.
So it was sort of strange that it seemed like I didn't want a relationship with her. It's not that I didn't want. I just didn't know how to, because I've never had to have a relationship with anyone other than mom or dad. That's all it's ever been.
Yeah.
Because we lived, my family life was literally on an island.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We only saw extended family maybe once a year, if that.
Yeah.
So you said that sort of piqued that for me, that's kind of
important,
right? If you're going to parent, you know, adult children, it's a really good way of keeping that relationship healthy is to have a healthy relationship with their significant other.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, especially if there's a single child, there can be some big old codependency stuff going on between parent and child. And, man, that can get messed up. That's what counselors are for.
Yeah. Right.
Go to counseling. Don't mess up your child's relationship. Yeah.
But we're pastors, we're counselors too.
Oh, good, right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, no.
Oh, man, uh-oh.
We have training, but it's limited.
Yes, definitely limited.
So what are conversations on faith like? You mentioned that, like, your adult children are not in the similar context that you are.
Yeah.
As far as denominationally or, you know, theological perspective.
Yeah.
So I wonder what dinner time conversations are like about theology.
Yeah. Well, it can get pretty exciting. Tom just sort of like takes a back seat, bless his heart.
I could so see it. Like, Tom is smart.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think this could be, so my situation is definitely not, representative of a majority.
Sure.
But I think that being in a different place from your adult child is the majority.
Yes.
It's like, so I think that, once again, it's just, it is not about being right or proving anything.
Sure.
It's letting them, like, they may go on and on about it more than me.
Sure.
But it's been, and sometimes it's an agree to disagree that we come to, and I just try to say, well, I'm not sure that we can be that sure or whatever. And I know that I used to believe this, but this is what I understand now after more study, and
sure.
Just try to be real with them,
sure.
Be present and authentic and loving, and it's not about being right.
But it is. Everything that we see and hear now says it's about being right.
Yeah.
That someone has to be right.
And that's, and particularly, I remember going back into, like, as an adult, going back to my parents' house, okay? It's like, all of a sudden, you're that little kid again. I don't know if you've had that experience.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of baggage with that. And so the more we can lighten the load of that baggage of, because my parents, they definitely had to be right about stuff. That was it. And
that was important.
Yeah. And, so I just think there's giving that leeway. I mean, that's grace. That's what Jesus did. That's how Jesus met people, no matter who it was. He met people with grace, and he didn't have to be right. And he was right.
Right, yeah. The epitome of right.
It wasn't about being right.
Right.
Yeah, it was about love. And
right.
So, yeah, I think we get lots of chances to live that out, especially as parents of adult children.
It's interesting, I'm curious, and this is just, it's related and it's not. This is just a selfish question. And I just wonder this as I see my girls like growing exponentially every single day. It's like, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we change as we grow, but do your kids kind of remain who they are, growing up? I mean, are they still, are they different versions of who they always have been? I'm just curious about that. Like, what are they gonna, because my oldest always says, whenever I just dote over her, every time she gets her hair, she's my pumpkin.
Yeah.
A pumpkin and a princess. That's my world. And my youngest, she eats it up.
Yeah.
She comes out and she will.
Is the princess.
She says, Daddy, do you like my hair?
Oh.
I love your hair. And my oldest, she's looking and as I walk up and she knows I'm getting ready to say something, she starts the slow eye roll.
Yeah.
She's like, I know what you're getting ready to do.
Yeah.
And then she'll just reach her arms out because she knows I'm going to hug her and tell her how beautiful. And it's just like, and then she says, she asked me something the other day. She says, are you going to do this to me when I get older? And so it's like now, ever since she said that, I was like, I wonder what she's going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I asked my mom that question and she's like, you are still.
Yeah. Yeah.
She said, your personality literally has not changed from when you were sitting in a feeding chair.
Yeah.
I mean, your temperament is, so I just wonder, like, and that maybe it's just me, but, so, I mean, is it sort of like a both and? Like, I know we grow, but are they, like, just older versions of who you
are? Yeah. Yeah, well, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Absolutely. So Matthew, he's very experiential. Very experiential. And whatever was the last ride at Disney World was his favorite. It's like, so if you want to know the best ride at Disney World, it was Blizzard Beach. Now, we all know that there's a lot more,
sure.
But that's, that was him as a little kid. It was like, if you upset him, it was like total upset because he's so in the moment. If he was pleased, if he was delighted, it was like total delight. And it's still, it's still that. Even as he's used to be a middle school teacher. Now he's doing his own business in woodworking and handyman, and he's, that's Dittman Woodworking and Handyman.
I have to give a round of applause.
Yes.
Shameless self-promotion. Yes. We embrace that here on the Testament Podcast.
There you go.
You'll hear it from time to time.
Anyway, so yeah, it's the same. It's just, you can see it, you know, just beaming. Those little dimples come out, you know, and mm-hmm. and Andrew, the same thing. You know, he is so intense and focused. And
I wonder where he gets that from.
Well, I have no idea. Yeah, it's like, oh Lord, help us. Yeah, on steroids though. Yeah, and you know, the other thing is though. Some of those stories that maybe were painful as a child that kind of attest to it's, you know, all of our strengths are our weaknesses.
Sure.
Our greatest strengths are our greatest weaknesses. And
yes.
I told a story just the other day to a very good friend about Andrew, and he's hyper-focused, you know. He can get a piece composed and, you know, and created from scratch in a half hour if you give it to him, if he's excited about it. And, you know, but can he pick up the clothes out of there that he's having to stumble across to get into the bathroom? No. So the hyper-focus story is when we were at the dinner table and I had gotten tired of filling glasses, so we had a pitcher, ice and water. And so he was filling his glass and he wanted some more ice. And so he's filling it and waiting for the ice to go, but the water is spilling over the top. Now that is focus.
Wow.
That is focus. And it was spilling. It's like Andrew, you're like, you're spilling. And but he wanted the ice. And so.
Wow.
But to, you know, so Andrew, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. It's not that you are not good. it's just that you have the gift of being very hyper-focused.
Sure. Sure.
And it is a gift and a liability. But some of those stories can be painful.
Sure.
And so, Andrew, if that was painful, please forgive me.
There's grace.
Yeah, yeah, there's grace, we hope. So I do think that we have to be careful about that. You know, he absolutely knows. He and Matthew both know 100% that they are loved.
Sure.
And that's what I see in you're telling your girls how beautiful they are. Oh, my God, if I had had a dad that did that, I would be a completely different person. So keep it up.
Oh, my God. My wife says I'm ridiculous. And I actually asked myself that one time because I just feel, and you probably know this, I just feel like in more times than I feel like I get it right, I feel like just a complete failure.
Yeah.
As a parent, I feel like I get everything wrong. Like I can't. You know, and that's one of the things I was thinking, like, is this another one of the things I do wrong? And I asked, you know, and my wife who grew up with that, you know, she had a wonderful, 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 just, her family's just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think they were completely crazy, but they just, they're awesome. I have wonderful relationships with all of them. And I shared with her one time, I said, do you think I'm doing too much? And she says, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
As a, I can see myself being that little girl.
Yeah.
She says, you can never
mm-hmm.
do that enough. And even though Aaron may act like, she doesn't like it. Oh,
she
no.
knows.
She hears it.
She knows deep in here that she is beautiful. And that's so huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and it's just, it's scary. Cause, and also being an adult. You know, I'm an adult child
yeah.
in more ways than one. but, you know, I think about that even when I, you know, I talk to my, you know, I'm married now, you know, all the stuff that hits me close, you know, I confide, you know, I talk to my wife. That's who I talk to about.
Mm-hmm.
But there are the occasional times where, you know, and it's not all the time, but there's an occasional time where something will happen where, you know, I just call my mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or call mm-hmm. my dad, you know, just to say, hey, you know, this is, you know, this thing is going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always good because some, you know, a lot of times I do that because I'm grateful for that because a lot of times, even especially with stuff at work, I mean, you know this, I mean, how much stuff does Tom hear about work? You know, I mean, it's like we go home with this stuff. Most pastors, I've always said this, if you're a pastor, you know, worth the robe that you wear. You live this stuff.
Yeah.
You don't just come in and pastor hat on and go home and it's like, mm-hmm. nothing that happened that day affects you deeply.
Yeah.
Personally, like we live this, right? We sleep with it and sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I feel bad just, you know, unloading on my wife where, who hears most of it? My parents.
Oh, wow.
When it comes to a lot of the ministry stuff, you know, I try to, because, you know, she goes to church here. One, a lot of it's just issues of confidentiality. I don't want to,
right.
You know, she's a member, technically a member of the church.
Same with Tom, yeah.
And she thinks it's ridiculous, you know, it's just like, I'm your wife, but I'm a pastor. I fixed that where confidentiality is a big thing.
Yeah.
So I don't just share everything that happens. I share how I feel, but when it comes to certain things, like sharing really the depths of how something hit me,
yeah,
how something affected me,
you can take it to, that's good. Good. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. One thing that you said kind of caught me, and I think the grace, to have grace for yourself as a parent, I think it's huge. Because we can't, we just do the best we can.
Sure.
And it's what grace is for.
Yeah.
It's not for excuses. But it's for forgiveness,
right.
Self-forgiveness.
Yeah. And so maybe our next, one of the things we're going to be dealing with in an upcoming episode is something that you hit on. This sort of thing about optional church.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, as we're talking about adult children, I think we are seeing the... And on the podcast, and I've said this before, we're not about, this podcast is not about answers.
Yeah.
It's about conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, in my opinion, I think we're seeing both the good fruits of that perspective and the bad fruits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are people that are deeply engaged in their own particular journeys of faith, regardless of where that leads.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that that because their parents, whether or not they were younger or adult children, did not force spirituality or their faith or like a child, their religion on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think on the flip side that we have a large gap of, I would say particularly young adult, because it was optional.
Yeah.
And that sort of culture was established. And you talk about that backpack. Well, if you never had that in the backpack to begin with, then...
Yeah.
So I've seen both in doing youth ministry has now for so many years, you know, you saw that where it's like a total different kind of world, right? It's like,
well,
I couldn't get them out of bed to come. I always thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Like,
it's not their bed. You bought that bed. Yeah. It's not their house. It's not even their room. They own nothing.
Yeah.
Not even the stitch of clothing on their bath. Why do they have a choice?
Yeah.
Oh, I can hear my dad right now saying, you know, it's like when people say, oh, you're, you know, they say, you know, oh. It even happens here. I think I slipped and said it to someone one time. I was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said it. It was just one of those reactions, right? You're like, hey, gosh, your girls are just well behaved. Well, they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't mean to say that sounds kind of harsh.
That's what life is, yeah.
They don't have an option to do otherwise, you know? And so, but it's interesting. I'd love to, and maybe that's another pod, that conversation, right, of what are the perils of forcing?
Forcing, yeah.
Or is it rearing a child in the way that...
Yeah. And,
Because they're ultimately going to do what they're going to do anyway, right?
Yeah.
Whether or not you've... force or teach or raise or train, they're gonna do what they do.
And what do you live? You know, man, what does the parent live? If the parent lives it, you know. Now if they're pissed at the parent and they're going the other direction, well then they may ditch what the parent lives. But
right.
It makes you
wonder how much of that dynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a
lots of fun.
That's a different pod.
Yeah.
I'm writing right now. If I wasn't concerned about picking up the scribbles on the microphone, I just want to thank you for being on the pod today. I enjoyed the conversation and the insights. You know, it's not something, you know, in church we often talk about.
Yeah.
You know, children ministry with children and their families, and we talk about, you know, youth ministry. It's very important. We talk about, and even now, you know, we're starting college age ministry, young adult, but you know, There's an awful lot of people, you know, that's another big demographic, you know, a lot of have a lot of older adult children. And so I just felt that it's worth talking about. It's a subject worth, I know there's lots of questions about that stuff.
Well,
I want to thank you for being on the pod today. So appreciate you. I'm grateful for your gifts and your energy and your passion for the ministry. And just being who you are, it's a true gift to the church. So thank you for being on with us.
Well, thank you. It's a joy. Absolutely. To be here.
And in the meantime, as you know, as we end every episode, you know, there's so much conversation out there right now going on about what's right versus what's wrong. You know, doing this thing versus doing that thing. One of the things I believe is that it's not oftentimes doing what's most right or what's most wrong. It's about doing what's most loving. Mm-hmm. That usually will end in the best results. Take care of yourselves. Be blessed. Have a good one.